Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program. And I am my own guest today, but I first want to thank Craig because I just could not connect on my Zoom. He just couldn't hear me, but very patiently he got me to relook and rejoin. Thank you, Craig. My topic today is the road less traveled, and this symbolizes the path of nonconformity. But before I start on my subject, I actually want to wish all our Muslim listeners a Ramadan Kareem and a blessed Ramadan, and may it be peaceful too. I would like to dedicate this program to the tens of thousands of internally displaced Israeli civilians from the north and the south of Israel, and to the hostages who are facing their 158th day in captivity. I'm thinking of your families and of you, and of course of our IDF as well. Now, the road less traveled symbolizes this path that we have a choice of which way we want to go. And it's from the poem that two roads diverged by Frost. The two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. That is Robert Frost. Now, how often do we decide just to follow others like sheep? We have many choices and on this life's journey, and especially now, life is asking a lot of us. Every single moment of our lives is the demand quality of life. What are we doing? Leo Buscaglia says that life is an uncharted territory. It reveals its story one moment at a time. And I find this to be very true because what's happening this morning is not what I'm finding meaningful this morning, talking on the program, talking to all of you and sharing this time with you. It's going to be different this afternoon, whoever I'm going to be sharing the time with this afternoon. Tony Robbins talks about meaning, which equals emotion. And he says emotion equals life, and that we are all meaning makers. So if meaning equals emotion, then we have many emotions in our lives: joy, sorrow, pain, gratitude, all those emotions that you can, all is also an emotion, all the emotions that you can think of. And in all of those, we can find meaning. Sometimes we have to dig very deep to find the meaning, but it is there. And the many choices that we have to make on our life path, on this road less traveled, it's difficult. It's often not where we expect to actually make the decisions, or the destination that we can always choose. And the poet said that the road was, that he found that one road was quite used and that the other one was hardly used at all. And he decided to choose that way. But we have to be very careful in the choices we make, because our choices shape not only our present, but our future also. And I really do believe that especially now we're being asked to walk this earth path with gentleness, integrity, empathy, walking always towards our challenges and with our challenges, our desires, our goals. Sometimes it's one step at a time, and other times it's literally a baby step. And if you've seen a baby taking its first step, you will notice that it totters for a moment, then moves forward, totters again, falls down, sits there looking absolutely startled. He can't believe that he or she could possibly have suddenly plonked down like that. But very determinedly, they get up again and move on. And I think we can learn a lot from a baby, that there are times when we are required to take these baby steps and to move very gradually into our future. This is especially so in loss. And lately, I have visited a lot of people in their Shiva week, their week of mourning. And I have realized that each one mourns in a different way. And you cannot go into a home and see a home of six people or seven people and expect them all to be at the same stage of mourning, because they're not going to be. And sometimes this can cause quite a lot of angst within a family. And I think it's something that we have to be aware of. The other thing that we really need to be aware of, and this has become very clear to me, is that in South Africa especially, we have domestic workers, gardeners, drivers, carers, whoever it may be, who have worked with us for years and years. And what happens if their employee should die? We literally do not even give them the time of day to grieve. We go into these Shiva houses, and unless we're told so-and-so has been with us for the last 40 years or 30 years, only then would we say, gosh, I'm sorry for your loss. It must be hard for you as well. But otherwise, we walk in and we don't really even notice them. I think this is something that we in South Africa must start noticing, that it's not just the people sitting Shiva that deserve our embrace of sympathy, but it's also the people who are serving them tea, cleaning up after the visitors have left. We need to stop and recognize their loss also. Life is almost like a train journey, if you think about a train journey. What is on this journey? There are many stops along the way. I'll get back to that.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and I am talking about the road less traveled. It symbolizes the path that we choose to take on our journey. If you would like to SMS me, please do so on 34519 or telegram me on 061-895-1019. Now, I had started to say that life is like a train journey. And if you actually think about the paths of the diverse paths that we travel and the ones we choose, that is part of this train journey. And each step, passengers either disembark off the train or they embark, they get onto our train. And so it is with the stages of our own lives. People come and go, and some people stay and some people leave. And it can be very, very upsetting when people do leave. But we need to focus on what is not what's wrong with our lives. We can always find what's wrong with our lives. It's focusing on what we are grateful for. And this is something that can change our entire perspectives of our lives. Do I find this easy? Do any of us find this easy? No, but it is a learned emotion that we need to start using and also teach our children and begin to walk our paths with wisdom, not just casually going on this journey on our path, not bothering about the people we're meeting or the people who are getting off our path. And why are they getting off our path? Some people it's easy to let go of. And actually, we're only too happy when they go on a different path. But other people, it's very difficult to. But you know that Tony Robbins was also fine saying that we have such a great vocabulary for hate, for hostility, but we need more ways of our vocabulary to to say I love you, and that's quite a difficult thing to do. Depending on your age, I do find that certain ages seem to find it much easier to share feelings, to say what they're feeling. But often we are asked on our path to be these heroes beyond despair, and that is not easy. It's the choose of freedom over the captivity of the circumstances that we might be in. Now, it is unique to each of us as meaning, and we decide who will walk beside us. Are some people going to lead? And are we going to lead as well? Or are we going to also walk beside people? We can't see in someone else's hearts, but we can stop, think, and realize that each person has an integral part of life, and if they're in our lives, they are in our lives for a reason. A lot of losses leave us so vulnerable, and lately the losses in our community have been a lot, and the South African Jewish community is not a big community, and these losses are really felt. And the ongoing loss through the war in Israel and Gaza on both sides is devastating for all of us. And of course, we're all being affected by it. There was a song, I'm trying to think what it's called. It says, I knew a man who lived in fear, and the nightmare would never ever rise again, he hoped, but the fear and the guns remain. And unfortunately, that's what we are looking at the moment, that the fear and the guns do remain. But I want to tell you that tears are so healing. And I often say that tears are to the soul what a good gym workout is to the body. We ignore our own souls sometimes, but we deal with our bodies. But we need to start looking at our souls, allowing the tears to flow if they need to flow. And what have we held on to for too long? That is a question that we need to ask quite often. Shortly, you're going to hear a YouTube by Leo Baskaglia, and that will also make sense to you about happiness. But what can we let go of? What can I hold on to that is serving my life? The people who are in my life for a reason. What can I release? This weekend, my cousins were here on Saturday afternoon, and my cousin was up here from Cape Town, and we're particularly close. I would say she is a soul sister, definitely of mine. And it was just such a wonderful, wonderful afternoon. It was incredibly hot, and we were all sitting outside under our gazebo. The fans were on. And then it started to drizzle just very slightly. And we all just loved the feel of this drizzle. We even stood under it, you know, feeling it falling on our faces. And it was a good feeling. And it reminded me of my mom and how my mom chose so many times to be involved, to be happy, to... She didn't have an easy life. She lost her first husband in the war, and she had been married, I think, for 18 months. When I say didn't have an easy life, but she lost my father and my brother, and eventually she went into dementia. But she taught me such a lot. She really did. And one day, she was in well into her 80s, and I've told this story before. She was well in her 80s when my friend Jenny, who runs a outreach program in Alexander Township, invited me to come and listen to a choir for the homeless. It was a whole lot of homeless people who had got together, and they had organized this choir. And I thought it was a lovely idea. And I happened to mention it to my mom, and immediately my mom said, oh, she's definitely coming with us. So she did. She duly came with us, and we all met at a particular place, and then we drove into Alex. And when we drove into Alex, we drove down very, very potholed areas and narrow roads between shacks, and we came to a place which they told me was a hall, Well, I must admit, if this was a hall, then I don't know what a hall really is. It was this big, almost, it was made out of tin and didn't have doors, and there were boulders in front of it that you had to climb over to get into it. And my friend Jenny was introducing me to a few people. Some of them were the elders in the community, and we were all talking about this lovely idea. I mean, singing is just such a wonderful, music and singing is a wonderful way of connecting. And we were talking about this when suddenly I heard my mom, "Cooey, cooey, Sue, Sue." And I lifted up my head to see her voice was coming from. My mother was 5 foot, a dynamic 5 foot little person. Anyway, and there she was being lifted up by two very large black men, and one with her bag slung over his arm. And there she was waving goodbye to us and saying to Jenny, "And I'll see you inside. Bye." As she was carried over the big rocks into this cavernous dark room with no doors and no windows and half a roof. It was, I must admit, I was startled, and Jenny and I both just started to laugh. It was hilarious. I have told this story before, so that for those of you who have heard it, just bear with me, because it is such a lovely story of connection. Anyway, when I eventually joined her, she insisted on introducing me to the two men who had carried her in. And she said to me, "Meet my two Zulu warrior saviors." Well, me, with the ever-present feeling of white guilt, looked at her in horror and said, "Shma, you can't say that." So she said, "Well, what nonsense." She said, "Now meet them." Very, you know, very determinedly, she said to me, and the two large men put out their hands and shook my hand and told me how very lucky I was to have such an amazing mother. When they were out of earshot, I said to my mother, "Ma, how do you know they're Zulus? How can you just say that?" She said, "Oh, don't be ridiculous." She said, "I asked them where they got their strength from. And they said from their ancestors, Zulu warriors." And she said, "And that's exactly what I said. That's why I called them my Zulu warriors." So, you know, it was the way she looked at it. I was looking at it kind of in horror and guilt and embarrassment. And she just embraced the moment. How often are we asked to embrace this moment? Now, when we actually arrived there, before she introduced me even to these two men, she was sitting next to an elderly woman who was coughing incessantly. And my mother was patting this woman's hands and saying, "Oh, you poor dear. Oh, poor dear. Coughing like this. Oh, no. Poor darling." And then she said to me, "Have you got a cough sweet or something like that for her?" You know, as if I'm going to be carrying cough sweets and cough syrup with me onto an outing to go and hear some singers in a choir. Anyway, she insisted that someone went and got this poor woman some water, and she went on holding this woman's hands. And then the singing started, and the singing was beautiful. But even more beautiful was to see hundreds of faces, some of little children, some of medium-aged children, some of older children and older people, hanging over through the roof, through the windowless walls, listening to the choir singing their beautiful songs in all languages and joining in. It was the most amazing, amazing experience. This was years ago, and I was talking to Jenny just shortly, a while ago, about it, and we were laughing about this exact time, because I have photos of my mom accompanied by her two Zulu warriors leading a singing crowd, because we'd now left this cavernous hall, leading a singing crowd, singing and dancing crowd, actually, down the road, and we were all part of it. singing and dancing down these narrow, potholed lanes with shacks on all sides, and people joining us from every street corner, every little shack that we passed. People came out to see what was happening. There was this tiny little white lady surrounded by her Zulu warriors, leading this crowd, laughing, dancing, and singing. And it was very moving when I think back on it now. Now, as you all know who have been to South Africa, in South Africa, taxis are everywhere. They are the main form of transport on our roads, and they hoot continuously to call their passengers and to announce. One hoot is because they've got room for so many passengers. Two hoots is for other passengers, I think. Anyway, and the strange thing was that these taxis were lining up behind the group of us all going down these roads singing, and they couldn't get past. The roads were far too narrow, but they weren't hooting. It was exceptionally strange that they were not hooting at this group of singing gospel singers blocking their path. It was truly a magical moment of pure joy and unity. And if I had known my mom would have said that she wants to join us, I probably would have made an excuse and said I probably wouldn't have told her, because, you know, it would have been just too much to expect her at that age to come in. But anyway, that was a great experience of her life. I must admit that 3 days later, she was admitted into ICU with pneumonia. And when I actually said to her, "Where do you think you got this pneumonia?" She said, "I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me it was because I was holding hands with that lady coughing." She said, "I don't care if I got pneumonia. I'll get over it." But that poor dear just needed a little bit of comfort. So she certainly taught me a lot in that time. The other story that I would like to say is that I have worked in many areas in life, either in my nursing career, my hospice career, my university career, my nursing, and each person who has embarked on this journey with me has taught me something. Some of them, I must admit, I was very pleased when they disembarked. Others I have treasured for life. And I think that is one of the things that makes life so worthwhile, that we have to open ourselves up to experiences, because if we don't, we shut ourselves out in this world, and it's a very, very lonely place to be. Loneliness is a disease. It really is. And it's one of the worst diseases that there can possibly be. And if we in any way can help people out of a loneliness place, then we have got the responsibility to do so. You know, Clarissa Pinkola Estes from Run with the Wolves said, "Ours is not the task of fixing the entire world at once, but of stretching out to mend the part of the world that is within our reach." That is something we are asked to do in this time of world history. And I know that the Oscars have just been, and I know that many of us are absolutely furious with the fact that the Oscars did not mention any of the sexual abuse that Hamas perpetrated on innocent women and children, men, and some of our IDF on the 7th of October massacre. It was not, it was brushed over as though it was never happened, and everything else was recognized except that. And I know that we are also furious about the one person who won the Oscar as a producer, and we can be furious with him because he certainly did let us down.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and you're about to listen to Leo Biscaglio, People Are As Happy As They Decide to Be.
Abraham Lincoln said, people are about as happy as they make up their minds to be. Isn't that nice? You know, don't expect others to make you happy. You create the joy and watch what happens. You'll be the one that's dancing through life. It's such a nice place to be. And isn't it interesting that people certainly are happy in all kinds of situations we can't understand? There are poor people that are happy. There are ill people that are happy. There are disabled people that are seriously disabled that are happy. Even among the dying, I have known happy people, which tells us something we should all know, and that is, it isn't the situation that makes you happy. It's you that makes you happy. I was on a plane recently with a woman who had just lost her husband 2 weeks before, and she was going to visit her children. And she said some beautiful things to me. The two of us cried together. You should see me on airplanes. It's unbelievable. I have such an incredible time. It's such a nice, unique moment where we can share intimacy. And then you say goodbye. You may never see each other again. But she told me about her life with her husband and about her kids and so on and so forth. Then she said, you know, Leo, the hardest time is at night. During the day, I'm busy. I don't think about it. But at night, when things are quiet and dark and there's nobody to be near you, then you realize the import of bringing people close. And she said, especially after 35 years of having somebody close, just as far as a hand. And she said, you know, when I go back to my kids, I know they're going to try to make Mama happy. They're trying to make her, going to try her, make her smile. My kids are sweet and they're wonderful, but they can't make me happy. Only I can make myself happy again. That got us to cry again. But how wonderful when you take full responsibility for your joy.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program on 101.9 High FM. If you'd like to SMS me, you can on 34519, or you can telegram me on 061-895-1019. At this stage, I actually want to say thank you to all of those who came up to me last week and told me that they'd been listening into the program and how much they'd enjoyed it, and also how much they enjoy Chai FM. So it was meant a lot to me. So thank you all for whoever came up to me. What Leo Biscaglia says takes us back to that, the choices that we have. How do we respond to life? And that's what it is. Responsibility is, how do we choose to respond? How do we choose our own attitude? You know, Pesach will soon be here, and it's our festival of freedom. It's certainly not free of challenges, but it is when we do have to relook at our lives. And there are so many stories of courage against obstacles and challenges. And our destiny calls on us to respond, to choose our attitude in all of life's moments. It is that demand quality of life that says, what are you going to be doing now? We sometimes have to look at ourselves from a distance and reach beyond our sometimes very busy selves. Stop running for a moment and listen to our inner voice calling on us to rise up to be our greatest selves. There's a wonderful story about Rabbi Zushia. And at the end of his life, he was crying and crying, and his pupils were sitting around him, around his bed. And they said, Rabbi Zushia, why are you crying? And Zushia said that he was crying because he knew that he had done his best, he thought, but he felt that Hashem would say to him, Zushia, where were you? And that question, where were you, is something that we have to ask ourselves. Are we responding to the injustices around us? Are we responding to the bullies that come into our lives and people who try and put us down? Are we responding to the good times of our lives, the happy times? Are we embracing those moments and knowing those moments pass, but embrace them while they are there and cherish those moments? And the ones that leave us really questioning life, they are there to question us on our lives. And there's a little known Native American legend. And this tribe was constantly at war with other tribes and with their families. It was terrible what was going on. They had no feelings at all for anyone else other than themselves. They would laugh at anyone who had wisdom. They would laugh at murder, at rape, at theft, at plundering. And these were all daily occurrences for this violent tribe. And they seemed destined to wipe themselves out of existence. And I'm quite sure that most people, or any people who were part of this tribe, were wishing that these violent, violent people would be wiped out of their lives. But finally, an old wise chief gathered together a group of the least violent braves, and he asked them to join a council meeting to discuss how they could prevent and save their tribe from themselves and from total annihilation. This wise old chief decided that the only thing to do was to take the secret of happiness and success from all of those who had abused these secrets, happiness and success, and that they would take the success and hide it. Thank you. I'll get back to that in a moment.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program on 101.9 High FM. I was telling you the story about this wise old chief of an American tribe, very violent tribe. And this wise old chief decided that the only thing to do to try and get these violent people, he called a council meeting and he wanted to try and save this tribe from killing itself. And he decided that he would hide the secrets of success and happiness. And he asked each one where they would like to hide, where they felt the best hiding place was. One brave suggested they bury the secret of happiness and success deep under the earth's surface. The chief said, no, that will never work, for man will dig deep into the earth and find it. Another brave suggested to sink the secrets into the dark depths of the ocean. But again, the chief said, no, not there, for man will learn to dive into those dark depths and find it. A third brave said they should put it at the highest, highest, highest mountain that there ever was. And again, the chief said, no, for man will climb even the highest peak and find it and keep it for himself. Finally, the old chief had the answer. And here is what we will do with the secret of happiness and success, he said. We will hide it deep inside man himself, for he will never think to look for it there. And to this day, according to that old Native American legend, man has been running to and fro all over the earth, digging, diving, and climbing, searching for the secret that he already possesses within himself. And I think that's what we are being asked to do at the moment, is to find the secret of happiness and success deep within ourselves. Since COVID, we have been faced with so many challenges. We have risen above them, and we will continue to rise above them. And Nelson Mandela said, to the youth of today, I also have a wish to make. be the script writers of your destiny and feature yourselves as stars that show the way towards a brighter future. May we all have a brighter future. You're now going to be listening to a short YouTube by Gilla Sachs, Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sachs of Blessed Memory's daughter, and it's on hope. Thank you, Craig.
The world needs voices of hope, of moral courage, of moderation, voices that remind us of the role faith has to play in healing the world, not hurting it. Voices that help us to see the dignity of difference and have the courage to believe in a better world. Over the past weeks, since the horrific terrorist attacks in Israel, there have been countless times when I have asked myself and been asked by others, what would my father have said to us if he was here? We have been desperate for words of comfort or guidance or hope. Words that could put some order or perspective around this chaos. Rarely have I felt his absence as strongly as these past weeks. I don't know what he would have told us to do next, how to move forward from here. But as I spent time with that thought, I realized there is something I think I do know. I think I know what he would have told us not to do. Firstly, do not, even for a moment, accept that this is the way the world is. We would perhaps be forgiven when faced with such immense tragedy if we were to seek comfort and tell ourselves that maybe somehow this is a part of God's plan, that we don't understand it, but we can accept it, that maybe we are destined to be a people who dwells alone, a people always under threat. No, we must not accept this. As my father wrote and taught in Judaism, faith is not acceptance, but protest against the world that is, in the name of the world that is not yet, but ought to be. And so we must protest. We will not accept it. This is not the way the world is meant to be, and we will constantly call that out. Secondly, do not, even for a moment, despair. Despair, my father wrote, is not a Jewish emotion. Od lo avda tikvatenu, our hope, we say, has never been destroyed. But that is no small task. It takes a great deal of courage to have hope. Optimism is a passive virtue, a belief that things will get better, whereas hope is active, the belief that we can make them better. At its ultimate, he wrote, hope is the belief not that God has written the script of history, but simply that he has given us the means to save us from ourselves, that we are not wrong to dream and wish and work for a better world. So we must find the strength to hope and not to despair. And thirdly, do not forget why we are here. The state of Israel and the Jewish people face a monumental task right now. But when we cry out, when we hope, when we fight injustice, we are doing so not just for ourselves. Judaism, my father taught, is not for Jews alone. He wrote, the struggle against Israel is no longer just against Israel. What is at stake in Israel's survival is the future of freedom itself. Because make no mistake, this will be the defining battle of the 21st century, which will prevail. The will to power, with its violence, terror, missiles and bombs, or the will to life, with its hospitals, schools, freedoms and rights. And wider still, he taught that the world in the 21st century needs the Jewish people. It needs Judaism. In an age of ecological devastation, it needs the Jewish reminder that we are placed on earth as Adam was, to serve it and conserve it. In an age of economic inequalities, it needs the Jewish insistence on tzedakah, charity, as justice. In an age of terror, it needs the Jewish insistence on the sanctity of life. Today, more than ever, I think he would tell us not to forget that. That we must stand tall, stay true to why we are here, and have the courage to engage with the world and all its challenges. We cannot let ourselves be defined by those who hate us. We will be defined by being a blessing to the world. And as my father wrote, all the pain and all the heartbreak are bearable if we can discern God's purpose or hear, however muffled, his call. As Nietzsche used to say, he who has a strong enough why can bear almost any how. I cannot know what my father would have told us to do, but maybe that is a start. Do not accept, cry out, protest. Do not despair, have the courage, the hope. And do not lose sight of why you are a Jew and why now more than ever the world needs Judaism and the State of Israel to be a blessing to others and a model of hope so that we can begin to heal some of this so fractured world. Thank you.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program. I hope you enjoyed what Gila Sachs had to say about the dignity of difference and how we ourselves are in this fractured world, but we don't have to. Faith is not acceptance. Faith is protest. May we all be a blessing in this world and stand tall as we engage with the world. Thank you so much. Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Vusi. And thank you, Makundi.